Okay, welcome back, everybody. We are winding up another week and trying to keep all of you up on the front edge of this completely chaotic disinformation, in many cases, based effort to confuse people about this bioweapon injection. And it's nonstop. Every time you turn around, there's something new there. Now they're back to pushing, I guess, graphene. It's like musical chairs. It's crazy. And I don't know how the average individual would ever wade into the alt-news community and come away with an honest, reasonable understanding of what's being done to them. It's very difficult. But it's something we're trying to help mitigate with reality. We don't claim to have the whole truth, but we have never really put our foot in a wrong place on this that I can remember. And I think we've always done our best to help focus people on what they should be considering and what they should not be wasting their time on. Anyhow, that's the best we can do, and we're always here and very happy to do it. Are you there?
I am here. Almost
what have you been
through
another
doing?
Another week.
Another
week. Yeah, never mind.
Waiting through
personal
the quagmire.
Questions. It's true, and what I say is you said it in the beginning that the alt news is damn dangerous. And
yeah,
I think it's worse
it
than that.
If you're
really in search for the truth, or as much of it as we can get, the alt news world is a minefield. It's dangerous. I've never seen more screwballs who can, you know, string 10 words together in a sentence, but the words they're wrong. They're erroneous. They don't seem to grab the big picture. They'll grab a little piece here, a little piece there, and they'll spin that up into the ultimate answer for all kinds of things. It's what information does when it's left in the hands of people who have agendas and people who are really not competent to occupy a chair of influence. But that's what it's all about now, influencers. So there we are. It's crazy.
That's true. And, you know, the major alt news platforms are owned. And they tend to set the pace for the rest of that arena. Yeah,
copycats,
the green screeners, and,
yeah.
and they can rely on them to amplify whatever the prevailing message is, whatever they want it to be.
And what they want it to be is whatever, in some cases, they're told, influenced to pursue and present. Otherwise, they're on their own. And I've just never seen more incongruous material put together with claims that it actually makes sense when it doesn't. It's just not science.
Yeah.
And yet everyone says, well, we're going to stay with the science. Well, when the science is perverted, corrupted, and homemade, you're in big trouble. So beware of that expression, too. I'm going to stay with the science.
True.
No, anyway.
Right.
Now,
right.
We have we have another issue here. I thought we might start out with this. It's called white lung syndrome, and it's getting more media attention now, more press. Children all over the United States are starting to develop white lung syndrome. Now, Michael Snyder is a well-known commentator and columnist, and that's his title for this. So for him to invest in it, it's kind of interesting. I don't know why he would, unless it was something that really is beginning to make some noise out there. He's usually pretty good about that. So what do we know about white lung syndrome?
I assume this is what this
pneumonia. They're calling
yeah,
it pneumonia.
The mycoplasma pneumonia that's happening in China, right?
Yep.
And it's making its way here.
Yeah.
Well, the thing that's different about it, apparently, is that it's not new. Children typically have, you know, this type of illness seasonally. And according to the statistics in Denmark, this type of pneumonia seems to surge every 4 years. So it's not that it's that unusual, but it's in tandem with influenza, COVID, RSV, and let's not forget these injections that have...
You know, hold on. RSV. I don't know anyone who's ever had RSV. Do you?
yes. Last winter, there was an epidemic of it.
I mean, I didn't know anybody personally, though, so I don't know.
No, no, just what they report in the... I mean, I know healthcare professionals that were reporting it. It was real.
Yeah.
But it was not the issue that it was last year, and you have to think that having had these experimental injections, which decimate the immune system, created a susceptibility that wasn't there before. And I think that susceptibility is still there this year, and mm-hmm. now we have this white lung disease, which appears to be a bacterial infection, mycoplasma infection, that is, oddly enough, resistant to the usual antibiotics.
Well, this goes, when you say mycoplasma, that immediately jerks your memory back to the Gulf War illness, which was, to a large degree, always associated with mycoplasma. What is a mycoplasma? Well, it's a bacterium without a membrane. That's what they used to say. How that's morphed since then, I don't know. Mycoplasma.
Mycoplasma. Well, there's many different types of mycoplasma, too.
I was just going to
rattle that off, is a mycoplasma.
Too. Right.
Leprosy
right.
is a mycoplasma.
So
I none of this should be a surprise, you know, given what's gone on the last 2 years, almost 3 years now. I'm kind of surprised we're not seeing more of it.
I agree. I do agree.
But the story, the official story is that the way they're spinning it is that, well, China had some very strict lockdowns, if you recall, and only recently lifted them. So they're saying that these children's immune systems, you know, got lazy and they weren't exposed to typical viruses, that they would have an opportunity to build their immune system towards.
Got it.
I mean, they use that same excuse here. You know,
yes,
after the pandemic, and we had, you know, lots of children getting sick, and they said, well, it's because their immune systems got lazy and they weren't trained properly, and it's up to you if you want to believe that.
Yeah. There's so much information out there. I don't know. It's difficult. I should sit down and write this out, actually, rather than just try and speak extemporaneously about it. But how would we advise newcomers to this program or people who are new to the idea of trying to find their way through this morass of really just amazing disinformation, misinformation. I've never seen anything like it. It's like building up to a fever pitch. It's really getting nutty out there.
I agree. There's nothing but confusion out there, and I would just suggest find somebody that knows science and can maybe guide you.
Well, hopefully that happens, and I don't know. Here's just a little bit of Michael Snyder talking about this white lung thing, because I don't know how many are involved with it, but it apparently is picking up steam. And you say every 4 years this comes and goes?
That's what the article
Europeans said
regarding the cases in Denmark. That it comes in waves or surges, cycles.
Yeah. Here's what Michael Snyder says. What in the world is going on? Last week, we were getting reports that hospitals in China were being absolutely overwhelmed by sick kids who had developed a condition known as white lung syndrome. Unfortunately, now we are learning that large numbers of children in the U.S. and Europe are also developing white lung syndrome. In many cases, white lung syndrome is being caused by a, quote, bacterial infection that many antibiotics cannot fight, end quote. Prior to this crisis, I, says Michael, was not familiar with Mycoplasma pneumoniae. According to the official CDC website, those who are affected usually only develop mild infections of the respiratory system. All right, so why are we seeing so many severe cases now? He asks. Has there been an accident with some bacteria that scientists were monkeying around with in a secret lab somewhere? In Ohio, there have been 142 child cases of white lung since August. That's really very, very small. So again, this is just afflicting a fraction of a percentage of the people so far. So what this noise is all about, I don't know. Just to be honest, I don't understand it. It's a marginal issue right now, showing no signs of really becoming major, not that I can see. So don't worry about it. I guess that's the message I'd like to deliver. Just be careful. Careful.
Yeah. It's a immune-compromised population now, so there's going to be all kinds of things circulating.
Well, that's why it's so important to take that one Allicin C capsule a day. It will give you a tremendous advantage over opportunistic bacterial and viral infections. You need that, and that's the best thing I can recommend, seriously. Not just because we've had it here for, 16, 18 years now, something like that, because it works. It's the best all-natural, broad-spectrum antibiotic on the planet, in my humble opinion. It's that good. So one a day, and you should have a lot of defense that anyone, especially anyone who's immune compromised, will no longer have. So you need to build that immunological competence, and this is the best way I know to do it. Allicin C. It's a great one.
Good.
All right. Now, Dr. Ryan Cole, who has always been a very heroic figure in the move to try to get the truth out about this horrible bioweapon that has been launched against humankind. Ryan Cole paid a very big price for this. He used to have a big laboratory. He's a pathologist, and he had, I think, 88 employees that he mentioned and millions of dollars in the most advanced laboratory equipment. He's lost it all because he chose to stand up and try to speak truth to power being those behind the bioweapon. And he paid a big price for it. He's still at it. He's very eloquent. He gave another major interview to Epoch TV. It's not same as the Epoch Times, Epoch TV. And we're going to play some clips from that. He makes some very good points, as usual. Always worth listening to. There are a few. Many of them are not worth listening to. And many of the mouthpieces or self-styled oracles in the alt-news world often start spewing garbage after spewing some reasonably good stuff for a while. So there's no stability in it. They'll just jump onto another train that comes along that looks like a nice ride, and they'll market it. So it's just never seen anything like it. Having been a journalist for a long time, coming from a family of journalists, it's really remarkable what is happening out there. I think the alt-news world is every bit as dangerous as the mainstream media now, maybe even worse.
I was thinking that. It could actually be worse.
Yeah. Okay. Anything you want to add about Ryan Cole before we start these clips?
No, let's just get into it.
All right. He's going to talk, these are short clips, 2 minutes, they're about, he's going to talk about LNPs, which, again, are, for the masses, maybe the most unknown, devastatingly dangerous part of this mRNA vaccine, the bioweapon. They have to coat the mRNA with fat, little fat particles, liquid nanoparticles. Tell us a little bit more about LNPs, and we'll play this, just a little.
Well, they're entirely synthetic. They're very toxic. We don't even know how they break down or how long they take to break down and how they're eliminated from the body. But whatever they come into contact with, once they've dumped their payload, they're positively charged. And so being that your cell membranes are negatively charged, they zap all of these biomolecules that they come into contact with and just fry them. And they can also damage DNA. So they've known that they're cytotoxic, meaning they're poisonous to the cell, and they can damage DNA.
That was always
the hurdle. Ever since these things were first discovered and manipulated, right, that was always the hurdle. They were a wonderful delivery system, but then once they've done their job, now what?
Now they're trouble.
So they're useful in delivering, oddly enough, chemotherapy, cancer medications for that exact reason. Because, if your desire is to kill a cancerous cell, well, these things are very capable of doing that.
Got it. But people don't think about it. I've been trying to mention mRNA hyphen LNP to try to get the point across that it's part of the mRNA package. It coats it. So it's there, and once it's done doing what it does, it's trouble. But people don't want to hear that. All right, here's Ryan Cole on liquid nanoparticles. Short clip.
My concern isn't just, you know, these COVID shots. My concern is this entire technology. A lipid nanoparticle in and of itself is an unproven product. It takes whatever its package is, you know, for, you know, they're trying to create them for RSV and for flu and for many other pathogens. It still takes those little gene sequences any and everywhere in the body. Lipid nanoparticles were intended and designed to go anywhere and everywhere, especially to take chemotherapeutic agents across the blood-brain barrier into the brain. So to use this as a carrier platform, a lipid nanoparticle plus whatever gene, cool conceptually, in all practicality, a horrific idea. To, you know, if a child is born with a gene disorder, you want to get that gene into all the disordered cells and try to repair that gene. Okay, that's one in a billion or one in a couple million. Cool experimental technology. But to randomly and willy-nilly give this to everybody with no long-term safety data. I mean, for a gene-based product, the FDA usually is going to look at the safety profile for 5 or 6 or 10 years before they even consider allowing it to go onto the market. So that's what we're up against with something like this.
Okay, and that's what we are up against. They just showed during that clip a little child, maybe two, a toddler, sitting on a medical exam table in an office. His shirt was rolled up, and they were about ready to stab him. And you just, it really hurts to look at some of these images. They're just horrible.
It sure does.
All right, his next comment, he's going to give some tribute to the late, really a great pathologist, Dr. Arne Burkhardt in Germany. He's the man who did the autopsies in terms of reproductive organs to find out what kind of infestation the spike protein had made, and found out some really staggering things. In the males he examined, and he was very definite and adamant about this. He showed slides, and he said in the testes there was zero sperm left to be found. None. Zero. Instead, it had all been replaced with 100% spike proteins. Think about that. So in the reproductive act itself, a male to female is going to be dumping deadly spike proteins into that woman's body. And that's not a good thing. The war on reproduction is eminently clear now. I don't know how it could be anything less. Anything else about Arne you got? I need a second or two here.
Well, when he was doing these autopsies, and I think he did them on close to 100 people before he died, they were finding it in just about every organ they sampled.
Correct, yeah.
And when you think about that, when you take a sample of an organ or a tissue, you're just randomly taking a piece. You're not taking the entire organ, but it didn't seem to matter. Wherever they put the probe to get the sample, that sample tested positive for spike.
And let me add one thing. I'll play the clip. This was not restricted to reproductive organs. Every single organ in the body, where the blood went, that includes soft tissues, hard tissues, were spike proteins.
Mm-hmm.
Just understand that. And then we might touch on this later, about how many different spike proteins there are. They're not all the same. It's not a uniform platform.
Well, they made it so that there would be variability.
That's it.
And therefore, no real immunity.
No, none. Here's Ryan Cole on Dr. Arne Burkhardt's really terrific work.
Dr. Burkhardt, the late great Dr. Burkhardt from Germany, mentor, great teacher, great researcher, great pathologist, he showed in some of his autopsy findings post-vaccine spike protein in the testes in several cases, spike protein in the placenta, spike protein in the uterus. I've seen some of those in the studies we were doing in my laboratory. And so you bring up the great concern, what are the long-term effects of what we've done population-wide? Is it everybody? Probably not, thankfully. But what percentage? Where are all those NIH dollars going to? Where?
Let me pause that. Is it everybody? Probably not. Probably not. However, we must include the unvaxxed in the group that is certainly vulnerable to spike infestation because of shedding. We're seeing more and more cases of people who have not been injected who are showing the same, almost identical in many ways, the same symptomologies, the same physical breakdowns in the blood, in all kinds of bodily functions. That's what these shots do. They're anti-life, and they begin to disassemble organized life. The brilliant achievement of organized human life is being taken apart. All right.
The research saying, okay, we brought something novel and new to the world, and we're going to make sure that what we did was the right thing. Now, the hubris and the megalomania of society says, oh, we can't ever say we did anything wrong. But I think honest science says, go back to, you know, the ice pick frontal lobotomy. Everybody thought it was a great idea until it wasn't. Thalidomide, Vioxx, all the disasters in medicine that have been created over eons, one has to look back and say, okay, we made a mistake. But you don't compound on your mistake. You go back and you correct the mistake. And I think we're at this opportunity and an inflection point in science to say, let's stop. Stop now. Stop all of this. Let's be honest. Let's assess the harms. And again, I don't want to scare people. I don't think it's everybody. But we're going to find out there are certain genetic subtypes that were predisposed to these factors kicking in.
And, you know, basically.
Okay. Now, the virus. It's virus season, friends, and yes, there are viruses. Influenza, all kinds of things. RSV is out there. Whenever you find yourself in a room full of people or a building, a business full of people, you better think twice about how long you're going to stay there. And we certainly hope all of you have paid heed and do use masks because they do work. They're not perfect, but they're sure better than nothing. So when you're around people, viruses are being spread all the time. That's a given throughout modern history. And now when you're around people, it's not just viruses such as COVID, but it's spike, mRNA, LNPs, and quite possibly even some of the DNA particles and apparently whole DNA that is now known to be in every shot. This is a relatively recent discovery. 100 billion to 400 billion pieces of foreign DNA are in these injections, each one. And apparently, virtually every piece, or most all the pieces, not 400 billion is a lot of pieces, can integrate itself into your DNA permanently. We don't even know what these pieces of DNA are and what they code for or what they'll try and accomplish, but they're there. So this is a season you need to be very, very careful. You do not want to get COVID. Remember how people used to laugh it off? It just got over it in a few days and it was nothing and whatever. No, it's really something. Now they've realized, and science has shown, that up to 2 years after you've been infected and gotten over the COVID infection, you're still being damaged by it. There's still residual in you elements that are not doing you any good, such as spike protein, such as potentially other things that are compounding the problem. It's not a good virus. You don't want it, okay? That's the bottom line. No variant of it do you want. So protect yourself. That's all I'm saying. Protect yourself.
I think what people are beginning to realize, maybe they don't realize it, but it should be pointed out that the antibodies, if you did make antibodies, not everybody makes antibodies. Not everybody seroconverts when they have this infection. In fact, the ideal response is a T-cell response, not an antibody response. But if you did end up making antibodies, particularly to the spike protein, the next time you acquire this infection, encounter this infection, it will be worse because of this antibody-dependent enhancement. And I think that's it could be the case of a lot of these shedding, what we think are shedding sicknesses, may actually be a secondary infection with the virus. And these people are having a very, very hard time getting over it.
Got it. Yeah, yeah. All right, Ryan now is going to shift and talk about these DNA sequences that we've been mentioning here. So let's see what he has to say about those. Remember, he's right on the front edge of this. He knows.
It goes to, you know, your computer where you have a read error or a write error. Mm-hmm. The shorter that sequence is, we have basically little correction enzymes in our cells that we have what are called DNA mismatch repair enzymes. And they'll kind of, if there's a break in your DNA, they'll go back and zip things together. It's like when you're driving down the interstate and you're kind of like zipping along, and there's that car that's going to like, oh, there's a spot. It doesn't signal, and it just kind of slides in front of you. So if you have these smaller spaces and these smaller fragments, it's easier to slip into those spaces and evade these stitching enzymes. If everything's tight, you can't, slip in. So to have contamination with a larger fragment, it's harder for that to become part of DNA. But this is used in research all the time. You try to cause breaks in whatever organism or cell culture you're working on. You cause a lot of breaks, then you throw in the gene that you want to get in there and the different sequences, and then as everything's trying to be stitched back together, all of a sudden you get that sequence stitched in. I mean, it's a whole lot more complex than that, but that's just kind of an easy way to just try to explain how that happens. And so that's the concern with these lipid nanoparticles in these sequences, is having those present, readily available to go through this accidental process. And that becomes the concern. And then depending on where they park themselves in the genome, they can activate a gene, inactivate a gene, and we have genes that turn on cancers. We have genes that are there to keep cancers from happening, tumor suppressor genes, but if those aren't working, aren't doing their job, then these cell pathways that allow mutation go on without being stopped.
So the DNA fragments that I mentioned and we've been talking about can go in and integrate themselves into your genome and turn on a cancer gene. They can do all kinds of things genetically that aren't good for life. That's the other problem. We don't know what really happened to have a vaccine, a bioweapon with two enormous loads of DNA particles, fragments. Well, you just heard him talking about that. Up to 400 billion per injection. So they didn't get in there through contamination. This is intentional. It has to be. That's me talking from a non-scientific perspective, but I've watched this for a long time now. I just don't believe anything in these shots is in there by happenstance. It's got to be virtually completely controlled. These are just diabolically evil things. So
I would agree.
These fragments are crucially important to understand that I do think if somebody's shedding mRNA, spike, that this DNA can be shed as well. These fragments, these particles, right?
That would be less of a concern than if there was an intact DNA plasmid. Now, the plasmids, these bacterial plasmids, were used as templates. Now, if some of those happen to remain intact, then those could be taken up conceivably by bacteria and, you know, infect the host bacteria. And then, you know, if there's an advantageous gene in there, like these antibiotic-resistant genes, well, that would, you know, these bacteria that are very promiscuous amongst each other would love to share that gene. And then next time you have an infection of some sort, it may be antibiotic-resistant. So the potential is there to transform somebody's microbiome. That's the whole point of that, the danger. Now, has that been proven? No. But it's something that should be looked at.
Is it not a general given that most anyone who's been injected is likely to have some kind of gastrointestinal problem?
Yes.
That's very common. When you annihilate the microbiome through either shedding exposure or direct injection exposure, you've got a big problem.
There's a couple things that are causing that we can point to, and one is the spike protein itself. When it docks on the ACE2 receptor, that's very prevalent throughout the intestines. That interferes with the intestine's ability to absorb tryptophan. And at the same time, that tryptophan is used by your microbiome, by your probiotic bacteria, to generate antimicrobial peptides. Secondarily, there's the spike itself that appears to be lethal to these butyrate-producing bacteria. Now, butyrate is a fuel for the cells of the intestine, and it's also a acid that keeps yeast and things like that at bay. And it's also, butyrate is also needed for cell differentiation, in other words, to control for cancer. So I don't think it's any mystery of why suddenly we're seeing literally an explosion of people having colon cancer of all ages.
I agree. 15-year-old kids, all right?
Yeah.
These are senior citizen diseases now appearing in children. All right, here's Dr. Ryan Cole on turbo cancers. It's a little update from him. He's right on it, so it's always good to get these.
She was the one that coined the term. She's a breast pathologist, and she was looking at the damage of these shots. What she was looking at in her practice as a breast pathologist, she was noticing increases in cancer, just like I was. I had commented on it, and then a couple months later, a couple other pathologists in the world started commenting. And she noticed an uptick, not only the size of the cancers, but the stage of the cancers. Instead of just getting, you know, a lesion taken out, one was finding lymph nodes and spread to the liver and spread to the bone marrow and spread to the brain. She was seeing these cancers behave in a manner that she hadn't before, which as I've traveled the world and spoken with many oncologists, physicians around the world, everywhere I go, I hear the story. I was here last week, where we are now in Texas. One of the very prominent oncologists here in Texas that I've stayed in communication with, he stayed kind of quiet behind the scenes, which is good, doing his job. He said, at first I saw the clots, then I saw the blood cancers, the leukemias, the lymphomas. Now I'm seeing the solid tissue cancers at rates I've never seen. Patients that were stable or cancer-free 1, 2, 5, 10 years, their cancer is back. It's back with a vengeance. And it's not responding to the traditional therapies. And there's an easy explanation as to why that's happening. It's not necessarily that the gene sequence is causing cancer. What the gene sequence, it can cause some of the mutations that lead to cancers. But what it's also doing, it's suppressing the immune system. And your immune system is what kills cancer. And if your immune system is asleep, your killer cells can't be activated. It doesn't matter what poison and chemotherapy one throws at a tumor, if the immune system isn't going to come in and play its puzzle piece mopping up game that it's supposed to play to help kill those cells and then clean them out. And I think this is what the oncologists are seeing that I've talked to. And that's my big concern on top of the other concerns is, okay, not only do we have these subtle inflections happening as predicted, but we have the immune suppression, and then we have traditional therapies that are gone because there's not the response one would expect. In fact, before we came up here to do this interview, I was chatting with a lovely gal who has breast cancer that's back. And we were going through this very same question, and this is real on a one-to-one, human-to-human-to-human level. Oh, man, my dad got the shots. He was a veteran, and his doctor said, and he was a good soldier, and he did. And his prostate cancer that was suppressed for 10 years, he died from it. You know, things like that. And that turbo is, it's a colloquial term, and the other doctor, there's no such thing. Of course there's no such thing as turbo cancer. It's a colloquial term, but it describes the pattern that physicians are seeing. So it puts it into a layman's understanding that, yeah, there's cancer, but it's behaving in a way that it shouldn't.
And is behaving in a way where the symptoms come faster. Right?
Yes. And this is where, again, I don't want to scare people, but I want to say, most people got a shot. My colleague, Dr. Angus de Galish in the United Kingdom, he is one of the leading cancer researchers in the UK. He noticed after the third shot, after the booster, that's when he called for an international moratorium. If you have a new symptom, if you had several, this is where, as much as the medical system is broken, don't ignore your symptom. That's what I would like to emphasize. You know, certainly vitamin D plays a huge role in keeping cancers in check, and we could go down that hole. We've done lectures on that before. But there's so many things that our public health system isn't teaching. Basic things that people should know. Do we have a horrible diet? Do we have a lot of toxins in our environment? Are we vitamin D deficient? Absolutely. But in addition, we have a lot of people that received a contaminated, adulterated gene-based product, and we don't know the long-term outcomes. So I'm not your doctor, but just make sure you're watching your health.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, just since we're doing this, you know, give me the vitamin D plug, right?
All right, so he's got to go into the vitamin D protocol, which everybody knows now. There is some divergence in views on how much vitamin D to take, how often to take it. So we've discussed that on this program before in the past as well. I personally have cut way back. I only take it once or twice a week now, not every day. There are reasons for that. So anyhow,
yeah, I don't think there's a cookie cutter prescription or recommendation for vitamin D. I mean, it is a hormone. And quite often what they're measuring in the lab is the inactive form that's in your bloodstream, and you really ought to be measuring the active form.
Active form, absolutely.
Because you may be very surprised that it could be very, very high. And that's often the case with people who have mycoplasma infections, because the mycoplasma will overconvert the storage form of vitamin D into the active form, and then you can end up calcifying your tissues, having all kinds of problems, and the symptoms are not pleasant.
Right.
But I think, you know, before you assume that you need it, you better test.
Okay. Let me get queued up here to the next section. This is an interesting one. It has to do with the differences between blood clots and amyloid clots, and when the amyloid clots become really obscenely big. Some people are suggesting now that these amyloid clots really don't coalesce and take final form until the body is dead and has cooled. Ryan Cole disagrees with that, but it is a very interesting topic at the moment. Many people have had amyloid clots removed and discovered when they're certainly still alive. What happens after death to these clots are potential changes? We're not sure yet. Anyway, here's Dr. Ryan Cole on this topic.
postmortem clots, if a patient unfortunately passes and one looks at the blood in that individual within a vessel, you can see almost a layering pattern and can tell that the clotting happened as the body was cooling and all those proteins were congealing. So it's almost looking like rings of a tree where you can look and say, okay, I can count the pattern of the weather in this year, that year, that year, that year. You can look at those tree rings and tell a story. Same thing in a postmortem clot versus something that happened while the patient was still alive and the clot formed. You'll see a different pattern within that clot in terms of how the different proteins lay down and the patterns you see. So one can analyze and distinguish that difference. So as many of the critics say, oh, those aren't real, they're real. They don't have that post-mortem pattern. They were in the patient pre-mortem, and these patients died with these clots in them. Is the human body amazing, and can you bypass blockages just like that pile up on the interstate? Sure, that's why we have microcirculation. But once a big vessel is blocked, then the whole city is backed up and then eventually collapses, et cetera, to carry the metaphor. But yeah, that's a good critique. I understand the critique, but from a pathology point of view, there is a way to tell that these were forming while the patient was still alive. My biggest concern is the fact that some individuals are still continuing to form these. An even bigger concern is the big scary ones is what are talked about, but there are microclots, microthrombi, that one can see. There's a little fluorescent test one can do called a thioflavin T test. You stain the blood, and if these microamyloid fragments are there, you can see them. And then you realize that these patients are forming the tiny, tiny clots that are affecting vessels in the eye. We're hearing about occlusions of the retina. We're hearing about little mini strokes. Wherever you have a tiny vessel, some of those individuals are having those problems long term.
And this is what, of course, Dr. Vaughn has been working on.
Yes.
Directly, if I recall.
He has.
Correctly.
He's been, yeah. He's been a leader in that area. This is an important point I want to add in. In the United States, the Attorney General in each state is responsible for consumer product safety. If you look at what is allowable for a claim for an emergency use authorized product, you're allowed to say may be effective. You cannot say safe and effective. That's false advertising. The Attorney General in each state is required to ensure consumer product safety for all the products distributed in their individual state.
So the punchline is, if you have an issue, take it to your state attorney general and basically make damn sure that they pay attention to it. That's the place to go, is what he's saying. All right, mm-hmm. He did cover the clot issue. Microclots, microamyloid clots, think of those as baby trees. They can all certainly grow and accumulate more mass, and apparently do. And then you have the bigger clots. Primarily amyloid now. You don't hear too much about blood clots these days. I'm sure they're certainly there and prevalent. But microclotting at that level, that's your workaround. If you've got a major blockage in a major vein or an artery, the microcirculation can take the pressure off the human body and allow blood to still move. It's really ingenious. But when you have microclots caused by spike at the micro level, those are shut down. And not only do the cells they're nourishing and nurturing die, but you have no more workaround blood flow potential in that area. So it's a very interesting and rather pragmatic body that we have. It's not full of mumbo jumbo. Anyway, I hope that was helpful for everyone. He's very good, very articulate.
Yeah, and I just saw a headline today. They're trying to say now that these amyloid clots or fibrils are 5G antennas. So.
Oh God, no! Oh no! Well, you see, as soon as you see a story with that inference or implication in the headline, it would be our recommendation, if you read it, be careful, real careful. Don't buy into the general deliberate opinion. It's all pre-digested for you. It's all tied up really nice and neatly. Here's the answer. Don't ask any questions. It's all 5G. Yeah. No,
I have to think that this is an intentional intentional diversion from the fact that this is a weapon. It's been a weapon all along. It's designed to kill. That's it.
Well, even some of the good ones like Ryan Cole will not come out and say this is a bioweapon. It was conceived and created as a bioweapon. It is not a vaccine. It is not a failed genetic therapy product or anything of the sort. It is a weapon designed to take life apart. And it does. It's incredibly sophisticated. We didn't even go into a lot of the smaller areas that in time will become big areas and lead to a full breakdown in health and ultimately in the life experience. It'll kill you. So this thing is, whoever put it together, this is, I guess it's called evil genius, or something like that. Okay, we have a few readers here. I've got them ready. Direct me to the one you want to start with, since you put these together. It's your turn to tell me what to do here.
No, you pick.
God, see, women. What is it with women? They will not back down. All right. I'll pick. Damaged from shedding. Sounds like a crowd pleaser. All right. It is surreal. I had stroke-like symptoms a couple of years ago and the chest pain I've been having, blah, blah, blah. Then there's a response. Hi, buddy. 2 years ago, I collapsed from chest pain and also had some kind of a seizure. The chest pain started after I was directly shedded upon, which led to COVID. I went to the hospital and they did EKG or ECG and a bunch of other tests and said there's nothing wrong with you. My doctor thought I might have a pulmonary embolism because it hurt when I bent over, but there was nothing in the tests. To this day, I get random chest pains. It's very scary, especially when you have collapsed prior and it triggers that emergency response in your brain. This is going to happen again. I find staying away from the vaxxed has helped, along with niacin and sleep. And that's flush niacin.
Okay? Correct.
Make sure you got that. All right. Next, damage from shedding 2. Go ahead.
I have also been horribly affected by shedding, starting over 2 years ago. I've just started her protocol a month ago. She said to follow it every day for at least 4 months. I have to believe in it because I've tried so many other things, too. I'm sorry you're experiencing that. I still have some really weird feelings in my head that started over 2 years ago and have been to the hospital many times because of my heart and had my appendix removed. Stay strong. There are millions of us all fighting this together.
Wow. All right, now we're going to move into some particularly dramatic readings here. These are short. Guy writes in and he says, American man, divorced, started having sex with kill-shotted women. Woman, singular. He was found dead in an apartment from shedding and transmission per his ex-wife. The doctor just came forward to announce a young, healthy girl died after being exposed for 21 months to kill-shotted or vaxxed parents. Again, she went to sleep and never woke up. They are killing us. Being around these bioweapons is killing the purebloods. It's alarming. Stay away, stay the hell away from the bioweapon, meaning the vaxxed. So that may be extreme for a lot of you, but that's how many people feel. And they've got evidence to certainly coalesce their own opinion on. Next, go ahead.
My unvaxxed best friend and her husband both died as a result of shedding.
Ouch.
Someone asked, did they wear blue masks? Answer is no, they knew the score. She was a retired nurse. Their adult son got the jab and came home for Christmas with a jabbed friend. A few weeks later after Christmas, they were both gone.
See, now, the general populace never hears about these things. I don't know any other platform that is presenting the human side of this horror that's going on all the time. It doesn't exist in the mainstream media. As long as there's a ball game on, which I think there's a ball game on 24 hours a day now. It's just not a good thing.
No, this shedding thing is you know, key to the Depop effort. There's no question.
All right, let's try and do a couple more here real quick. Post-COVID turbo cancer. I lost two sisters 2 years ago. Both had COVID. One sister was incubated right away. She fought them as hard
intubated.
As
she... Intubated.
Was it both correct words and trying to trick me? Okay, she did. She got me. All right, one sister was intubated right away. Now, why would you do that to somebody right away? That's a last resort. It's supposed to be, isn't it?
Well, if this was 2 years ago, that was...
Yeah, that was the big time for the protocol. All right, one sister was intubated right away. She fought them as hard as she could. She passed away within a week. My other sister also had ovarian cancer run throughout her body. She was diagnosed in the hospital with ovarian cancer. They did surgery and felt they got it all. They let her out of the hospital, and she was back the next day. They did a CAT scan and an MRI. The doctors said they had never seen a cancer that spread like wildfire. I think the COVID sent the cancer throughout her body. Both my sisters were healthy all their lives. I lost my two sisters within 2 months of each other. All right, there's one more there. It's colon cancer. Go ahead and take that one.
Okay. My dad, three times vaxxed, got diagnosed with stage 4 colon cancer, spread already to his liver and lungs. He was losing weight over the past 2 years, and they kept telling him all results are perfect. And now this. I am heartbroken and devastated. Now my husband says I should get a colonoscopy. I'm 45. I read on here that it's not good to do it. Can I hear some opinions, please? I'm not vaxxed, by the way.
Wow. Now, you just heard Erica read that. I'm not vaxxed, by the way. The actual text says, I'm not YKW, by the way. Now, we know what that means, but if you're reading these for the first time, it's challenging. Fun stuff. Okay, I think that does it. It's always good to hear Ryan Cole talk.
Yeah.
He's so personable and articulate and non-pretentious, unlike some others I could name. So that's about it. Anything you want to pop in here at the end? These turbo cancers are not a joke. They're running on a whole different track or path than normal cancers would. It's something else entirely going on with these things. They are like lightning.
Well, and I don't think it's that much of a surprise when you realize that this microclotting is creating the condition, this low oxygen starvation in the tissues for cancer to happen.
Exactly.
So I think that's, you know, one reason why you see multiple cancers springing up in different locations, because the same pathology is happening throughout the body. There's low oxygen.
Right. I would also, we got to run here. I would also suggest that these fragments of DNA, which can turn on cancer and do a lot of damage, shouldn't be ruled out. They're in every shot. 400 billion up to, that's the top estimate, 100 billion.
Now, these things are absolutely cancer shots. There's probably 16 different ways to ensure that whoever took these things will develop cancer at some point. I mean, I hate to say it, but
right.
That's a fact.
That is a fact.
They knew
Thank
it.
You.
All okay.
right, we got to run. Great job.
Thanks, Jeff. Good night, okay. everyone.
Be right back. Hold on.